Willie and D Mace here on this 3rd of July on 102.5 The Game. We are having a great time. Our thanks to Barry Trotz. A long interview with a lot of detailed answers from the Predators general manager. It has been such a busy week. We'll go back through some of it a little bit later in the show. But remember, as we're about to hook up with Jonathan Hutton, we'll change gears a little bit here. But join us tomorrow on the 4th of July at the 18th Annual Music City Hot Chicken Festival over on the east side. That's East Park, right off of Woodland Street. It's a spectacular day packed with live music, contests, and, of course, hot chicken. It's free, so bring the whole family. It's free, so that's the key, right? So to discover more by going to the website, hotchickenfestival.com. Willie and D-Mates brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem, call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 and up and in Tennessee to bet. Let's see if we got Jonathan Hutton. I think we do. So, Hutt, you saw the frenzy, I'm sure, from where you sit, where all of a sudden, at least in hockey circles, Nashville was a big center of attention. I'm thinking back through the years of, you know, this time of the year is usually kind of low-key. It hasn't been very often that the Predators sort of grab the headlines like they did.
It was cool. Yeah, it reminds me, Willie, of Forsberg and Paul Kariya. I'm sure you've heard that a little bit. That was right in our heyday, right? That was a lot of fun. I remember Peter Forsberg, you know, Hall of Famer. Everyone knew it. Coming out to the show in the afternoon one time. I think Kariya did the show with him, maybe. It was packed, man. And that's when, you know, the 14,000 and the push for all that was on. That's the last time I remember it making a big splash like this. You know, like, there have been players along the way that, you know, it with Duchesne we've certainly seen Poyle once, but not like this, man. This is different. And it's a different vibe across the pro sports in the city. Titans change coaches. You've got the Nashville Soccer Club. They've changed coaches, you know. And then what I saw, Braden Gall put out what the combined in just the life of the contracts, the Titans and Preds combined have spent over $1 billion this offseason. When you combine everything, that is insane considering how we would perceive the Titans and Preds to be versus what we just witnessed.
Yeah, it's like small market. You think small market, but that is not a small market kind of spending. And so, it's, you know, thankful for the ownership of both teams to be able to jump in and do that. Jonathan Hutton's with us from Hot Mike and with Hutton and Withrow. So, Hutt, I was thinking back through too, you know, summer stories that grab our attention like this. These are usually the dog days, but I feel like this is another part of the growth. You just mentioned Nashville SC and, you know, the races that we have now, the Live event that came through, that some of the best golfers in the world coming through here. We've come a long way. There's just not as much of a dip and a lull as there used to be on the sports calendar.
No, and think how close we were to the World Cup coming in a couple of years.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I mean, we're very close to that. That would have been the first event to open the stadium, if I'm not mistaken. And what's to come down the pipe, so to speak, for the city compared to what we're just seeing now? I mean, that I think we should mention all of that, plus the Indy race. You know, like, there's a lot throughout the summer months that we didn't have, man. There were a lot of Mount Rushmore topics. And now you don't need that.
We have not had to play that card.
No, we haven't. Not yet, anyway.
Man, and on top of it, we're right in the heart of SEC country. And what a turbulent last 3 years it's been on July 4th weekend with news dumps, with conference realignment and the like. Here we go. I mean, it's a lot different in the belt of what is football Americana, but outside of football, there's a lot more here, and certainly maybe more to come. Hey, imagine if Nashville or somewhere in the mid-state were to land a WNBA team, for instance. You know, there's a lot in this calendar that I think the city can absorb. And I'm not just talking Major League Baseball.
With that being said, Hutt, and then listen, you may have answered the question in what you were saying, but have you seen an off season like this since you've been covering both teams, the Nashville Predators as well as the Tennessee Titans. The Tennessee Titans going out and getting big name free agents, and then you look, you fast forward 2 months later, and the Nashville Predators are bullish and they go get top free agents as well. And you look at both rosters and you think, oh wow, they've done enough to put themselves in a position to have a much better season than they had the previous year.
Yeah, I mean, no, I mean, combined, absolutely not. And I mean, even when the Titans have made splashes, they've had to wait on their guys. I mean, mm-hmm. DeAndre Hopkins wasn't an immediate signing by any means, right? But he comes to mind as like the top guy that's actually paid off. There have been others, you know, in recent memory, you know, Julio Jones was a trade. Bud Dupree was a big name that didn't pan out. But again, a lot of money to a big name free agent on the edge. Randy Moss was a waiver claim. I mean, nothing like this, what we've seen this offseason, Mace. And then combine it with the Preds that, I mean, just look at the odds in Vegas from – I mean, if you want to talk like just the perception of the two franchises, the Preds and what they've done this week, they're Stanley Cup contenders just looking at the odds. The general public still down on Tennessee Titans despite their offseason. I'm not trying to downplay what they've done. They need another one. And what Barry Trotz has done with the aggressive, I love the phrase serial winners. I love that. And man, that's kind of what the Vegas odds would indicate moving forward. I love just the chips in the middle of the table approach with what they've done and all the debate about Soros and what they're going to do, who they're bringing back, who they're not. This is more than just let's bring in Korea and Forsberg and get a little buzz going. It's more than that.
Now, you did mention the SEC. Now, I'm going around. I'm sort of
do
going
it.
Right to left, left to right. I'm all over the place with my topics. But you spoke of the SEC. Now that we're officially going to have new teams in the SEC starting this season, how do you see it playing out in the football world in regards to the new SEC?
Well, keep in mind, the top two teams now are going to Atlanta, the divisions. I think what's going to end up happening, if you look at the difficult schedules, Florida is in an island by themselves with that gauntlet they're going to face. But the teams that are not there, in terms of just SEC is a difficult stretch, but who you would draw, Missouri and Ole Miss could end up having historical seasons and actually get to the college football playoff and not have to face the same type of gauntlet stretch that a Texas or Oklahoma may have to face. In thinking about the matchups, by far, Ole Miss has a great opening. And Missouri, I believe they play Alabama and Oklahoma. But beyond that, Georgia, I think. But beyond that, not Oklahoma. It's not a difficult stretch by any means to say Eli Drinkwitz ends up having another phenomenal season in terms of what their expectations are and what they're facing. Chad and I were discussing recently what we think about Texas coming into the league, and whether or not they're a Missouri version. Whenever Missouri came into the league, they went to the SEC championship game. I think Texas is a really good team. I just think I'm looking at the schedule. I would take Ole Miss or Missouri to make it to Atlanta to face Georgia. No one's going to not take Georgia. Playing the odds and the schedule, and I know who's going to get off to a hot start. And typically Texas, they stubbed their toe at some point, albeit last year it was to Oklahoma, but those two teams have to face off. And then Texas, of course, is going to a number of different places in the SEC to begin.
Now, how would you rank the SEC in the preseason right now? And does this new alignment, is it going to be tough for UT? Because before, only thing you had to do is win your division and you're in. But now there's no divisions, and you don't know what type of team they're ushering in a new quarterback, UT, some new players, but you just don't know quite what type of team they're going to be. So, do you think this new year, the way things are sort of set up with no divisions, will it hurt or help UT? And then, who do you see as the top two or three teams in this conference?
Man, as long as Tennessee rushes the passer the way they're set up to rush the passer, who knows? We're going to talk a lot about Nico, right?
Yes.
But they're a lot. Tennessee's a lot like LSU. So you move on from Daniels, and it's kind of like, okay, now what? What to expect? The Vols potentially have the number one overall pick on their defensive line. I mean, again, should be, could be. I want to know if it turns out that way. A lot has to play out in Tennessee's favor. They also have to go on the road to Oklahoma. There's a stretch for Tennessee as well that is not overly appealing for a younger team, but it's a defense that should vastly improve if the pass rush is what they say they are. So, again, all bets are off there. Top teams in the SEC, it's, for me, Georgia, Ole Miss, and Texas. And I don't want to write off Alabama. I may write off Alabama moving forward, but this year, with the talent that they returned, especially at quarterback, and Kalen DeBoer, known for being a ball coach, he didn't have to recruit this roster. He had to keep some of his players, right? He didn't have to recruit this roster to be pretty good. And I think we're writing writing Bama off this year when looking at whether or not we believe in the years to come. And I think this is a pretty good roster down in Tuscaloosa that's still returning. And, man, there's a lot of pressure going on in Auburn. Let me just say that. They're a wild card team right there. Hugh Freeze is it's time for him to break out a little bit.
Don't you think, Hunt, we're going to end up spending a lot of time during the season talking about what's the best way to schedule and balance the schedule, right? Even if they go to 9 games, right? There's too many teams. You can't have everybody play everybody. And so it's going to be a constant debate of whose schedule was tougher. Both these teams have 2 losses. And we're talking about just the SEC games. Forget about the national picture and everything. But we know the SEC is going to be a beast every year, and the depth is going to be huge. But who you play within the league is going to be a massive, massive topic. And I don't know if there is a solution.
Man, it's a fascinating one because you want to play your rivals, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's not fair to every team in the SEC. If whoever's going to end up drawing the typical perennial powerhouses, but that's the league, right? If I'm a fan, I wouldn't want to trade in the rivalries for wins. So let's just compare here. Tennessee is going to go on the road at Oklahoma. They're going to face Arkansas, Florida, and Alabama in a 3-pack. And then before Arkansas and after Alabama, they've got a bye week. Then they face Kentucky, Mississippi State, Georgia, and then they have UTEP and Vandy. Now let's compare that to Missouri. Missouri has Vandy, A&M, Auburn, Alabama, Oklahoma, South Carolina, Mississippi State, Arkansas is their conclusion. And then Ole Miss, man. This is Kiffin's. If not now, when, Lane Kiffin? To your point, Willie, Kentucky, South Carolina, LSU, Oklahoma, Arkansas, Georgia, Florida, Mississippi State. That's their SEC slate. That's pretty good considering the conference they're playing in, man.
Right.
And that's way different. Here's Florida.
Before the season, and then we're about 80% through the season.
Now, think about being Billy Napier. I don't know if Billy Napier makes it through the year because of this schedule. Texas A&M, Mississippi State, Tennessee and Kentucky, Georgia, Texas, LSU, Ole Miss, and then they end with Florida State. Now, I added Florida State in, but that's their SEC slate. Those are not equal on the scale of being fair and balanced. So, but I mean, it'll come back around to Ole Miss. The question is whether or not they capitalize when they should. And this is the year where they should. Napier, unfortunately for him, is facing a pretty tough uphill battle to keep his job down in Gainesville. And we're not even out of the gates yet with their matchup against Miami.
The more teams that are in there, and now with the lack of divisions and the change, it is harder to even have any semblance of structure. And I think there's going to be a lot of coaches that don't end up liking how it shakes out here. All right, Hutt.
You can actually regress a bit and I want to see how coaches are treated, Willie, for making it to the college football playoff or maybe missing out when they're a three loss team, but they actually picked up a good win along the way. You know, like there's more pressure to just make it to the playoff now instead of just make it to a nice bowl game on New Year's Day.
Hey, Willie, before you ask Hutt your last question, I do got a quick question for you, Hutt. And out of these quarterbacks in the SEC, I'm taking out Brock Ewers and Carson Beck. Those two guys I think have proven themselves in this league. So out of these three or four quarterbacks that I'm going to name, which one of these guys you believe will have a breakout year?
Okay.
Jackson Dart. I'm throwing Jalen Milroe in there because I still think he has another level that he needs to get to. What is it? Brady Cook and Nico. Which one of those quarterbacks you believe will have a breakout year?
Brady Cook. I think it's Missouri with Eli Drinkwitz. I like what they've done, man. Mm-hmm. They've got a star wide out there. It should be Brady Cook. Milroe should be okay, man. Like, I like the way he rebounded from being benched and came back to be a leader. I like how he handled that. A lot of dudes would not handle it the same way. Jalen Hurts didn't handle it the same way. He bolted to Oklahoma. I'm not blaming him. I'm just saying, like, it's just a little bit different approach. I like how he approached it. Nico is the wild card, man. He's the $2 million quarterback. So, but everyone is now, right?
Exactly.
And I would throw Quinn Ewers in the mix, man, because he's been injury prone. And guess who the backup is?
Yeah. Manning.
There's another. Just throw that in there as one of
there's
one
a storyline there.
As they come into the SEC, that will be a story for sure.
And what was Peyton's freshman year, Willie? Think about that.
Oh, and.
And how it started. It
wasn't even half of the first game, I remember. Remember, he was the third quarterback to come in. He wasn't even the second quarterback to come in.
And I'm thinking just the first year in the SEC. The stories write themselves. That's too good for Manning at UT to take over for an injury-prone quarterback.
It is insane. All right, Hutt, here's the parting shot. All right, I got the latest email from Jimmy Shapiro. Do you get the emails from Jimmy? Like, I still don't know
Shapiro's
who this
the
guy
man.
Is.
I don't. I
get two or three a week from this guy. And
I'm not on the 1-800 club that you call for the picks of the week.
You don't know Jimmy? I sound like
I know Jimmy.
Snipes. Okay,
no,
you
but
know Jimmy.
I'm not on the email chain. You have to forward these to me.
I keep thinking about White Man Can't Jump, Wesley Snipes, and Woody Henderson, Woody Harrelson. There, you don't know Jimmy. You don't hear Jimmy. But Jimmy Shapiro always sends us these odds. So here it is on July 3rd, this is the Will Levis over-under for the straight-up back of the football card stats.
Okay.
Over or under 19.5 touchdown passes, over or under 12.5 interceptions, and then over or under 3,400 yards is the over-under for those three. Do those sound about right to you?
Yeah, I'm taking the over in all three of them.
Okay. So you feel like he'll stay out there and have more production than that?
Yeah, I mean, I'll say that the dude's pretty tough, right? He'll be out there and he'll sling it around. He takes a lot of chances. I don't think you get that out of his blood.
So you're saying he will throw more interceptions? The interceptions that not necessarily good.
Yeah, but I mean, Brian Callahan's favorite throw by Will Levis last year. He admitted it was an amazing throw that somehow it was in between two defenders and said like. By the way, we don't want him taking those chances, but meaning like it could have been picked off very easily.
Yes.
But he also should have been caught by Treylon Burks. I should throw that out there too. It was incomplete. I went through his hands, but again, like those will happen. There's just too many receivers on the roster right now. Again, I'm playing the healthy card in taking the over, but there's too many receiving options, including out of the backfield for him not to have more touchdown passes. And, again, I think any quarterback that's slinging it around with a new play caller is going to throw some picks.
What do you think, D-Mace? Does those sound doable? The good side of all of those, 19.5 touchdowns, 12.5 interceptions, 3,400.5 yards. And Hutt hits the key point. He's got to stay on the field for that to kind of come to fruition, because your answer could be he's going to go under because he's not going to be able to last.
Yeah, I think with the addition of what they did to the left side of the offensive line, now they got to get the right side solidified. But I think that will come with repetition. And as long as those guys don't you know, as long as there's no injuries to the right side, if they can stay together, I think they'll be much better than they were last year. So a lot of this is predicated on the offensive line. But I think with the weapons that they've added, with the new look offense, I think 19 touchdowns or more than that is doable for him. What did he throw last year? 12, 8, somewhere around
there,
8, 12?
Wasn't it 8 comes to mind?
Eight,
I don't
eight.
Have him in front of me.
It was 8 because he threw 4 interceptions. So I think 19 is doable, but so, a lot of it depends on whether he can stay on the field or not.
What those stats are, I'm taking the over. He's more or less Trevor Lawrence of last year. I'm looking up Trevor Lawrence. He had 21 touchdowns and 14 picks.
Yeah, I can see that.
4,000 yards.
But the, you know what, the picks,
yeah,
I'm not going to, if he throws 14, 15 interceptions, I'm not going to sit here and panic. To me, sure. It's when he throws those interceptions,
oh, yeah,
and how they look.
Just
to
ask
me.
Ryan Tannehill.
Exactly, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. If Ryan Tannehill throws 3 interceptions during a season,
you're right,
nobody thinks about it. But when you throw 3 interceptions in one game in the playoffs, everybody's watching it.
Now, here's the thing. What's their record if he hits the over? See, that's interesting to me because
it could, because I remember this is always the image that comes into my mind when you say that, Hutt, is fantasy football.
Right.
There are quarterbacks that through the years, and the first one I ever honed in on was Jim Everett. There was this thing that It may have been after he was on the Rams and he went to the, I think, to the Saints late in his career, but he had a couple of years where his team was always behind. But because of that, he was getting touchdown passes and yards late in games that weren't helping them win, but it was good for your fantasy team. So that is one way you can just get these straight up stats, right? Is you're always behind, so you're throwing more, and so you accumulate more of all of these things. So that's part of it, right? That's part of what you have to weigh in.
Last year, 8 touchdowns, 4 picks, by the way. Mm-hmm. You crushed it, Mace. 1,800 yards. Man, you're right, Willie. I mean, to me, if he hits the overs on that, they are the Titans are right there with the Texans playing the Colts at the end of the year for a chance to go to the postseason.
Mm. See, that's 18. The thing. Is, what's the right amount? I remember the late Floyd Reese used to say this a lot when Marcus Mariota was the quarterback. He would say, and even Tannehill, he would say, look, it's great that he threw for 300 and something yards and threw 40 times and he went, you know, 26 for 40 with 3 touchdowns and 2 interceptions. But that's not what this offense is supposed to be doing. That's not good news for the offense. They want to throw it more like 25, 28 times.
Right.
I think about that a little bit, but I do think that they want to go more modern and throw the ball more.
And I think they evolve as the season progresses. Mm-hmm. I think early on we'll see more runs, maybe some balance. I say maybe. I think we should see balance each game, but you know what I mean. And yeah, I mean, I think they throw it around. And I'm not saying they go, you know, going for the bundle, as the great Mark Howard would say every play. I think Will Levis would do that. And here's the other thing. Consider
Floyd
how
and Mark
times,
somewhere was, upstairs are laughing that we're referring to them here. They're smiling somewhere, I hope.
Going for the bundle. Hey, final thought on that, though. Consider there were 2 or 3 times this past season where the opponent in the fourth quarter made a long drive and scored when it mattered. This defense in the secondary should be better. I mean, they put their money in the pass defense. That's where they were. Just, I mean, they were picked apart when it mattered most last year in those moments. That they should be better. If they're a stop better, especially in those moments, they had the lead in a couple of them. Maybe they pick up an extra win or two. And again, an extra win or two last year puts you in, you're at Christmas in the playoff race, legitimately. For what that's worth, you're battling for a potential 6 or 7 seed. Maybe even the division winner just asked the Houston Texans.
That would be a victory if we get to that point. If they're in the race in December, at Christmas time, that's all you can ask. Really.
And
that would be a good first year, regardless of whether they made it or not, I think.
Expectations for me, if they are this year's version of the Houston Texans, they're a year ahead of schedule. They're a year ahead of schedule, and that's a great sign for a young head coach and a young quarterback.
Hutt, great stuff. Best wishes on the holiday weekend here.
Thank
enjoy
you.
Your fourth. Be safe, and we'll talk to you next week.
You go Sandlot or Back to the Future if you had a choice for July 4th movie.
Oh, Back to the Future. Even though I love Sandlot, but I got to go Back to the Future.
Whoa.
Really?
I got to go Back to the Future. Yes.
This is a better debate than I thought. We're going to bring this up later.
You can't.
I thought this was going to be a massacre for the Sandlot.
You can't go wrong with either movie, but I am strong Sandlot. You can't beat the Sandlot. That is
the best.
Back
to the Future was released 39 years ago. No, excuse me. 49 years ago today.
Oh, wow.
No, it's got to be 39. It's got to be 39.
Is it 39? Hang on.
It has to be 39 because I'm 50 years old. So, yeah, 39 years ago today.
Let me double check. It's right here. Oh, 39. Yeah. I stand correct. Next year will be the 40th anniversary.
Wow. And Sandlot would be more like 31, something like that. Wasn't that like 93, I think, Sandlot?
If you give me 2 seconds, I'll find out.
Yeah. So these movies are putting some age behind them, but they are
1993.
Right?
You're amazing, Willie. Okay. April 7th, 1993.
Oh, man. Benny the Jet Rodriguez. He's in the pickle. You got to love it. All right. Hutt, we'll talk to you. Have a great day.
See you guys. Happy 4th.
All right. Yep. Same to you.
4th of July themed movies. That's a great category they got. Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow. Jonathan Hutton, Chad Withrow contributing to our show as they do. Each week here on 102.5 The Game, D-Mace and I will be back. Maybe we'll have to hash out a little one-on-one, Sandlot versus Back to the Future. We've got Ask D-Mace. I know our text line has been down all week. We'll get that back up, hopefully, next week, first and foremost. So it may be a little harder to ask D-Mace, but we would love for you to go old school, since we're going to talk about two old school movies. And what do you think? Which is the better 4th of July movie? Is it Back to the Future or is it the Sandlot? Or do you have an offshoot on that? 615-737-1025. Or do you just want to ask D-Mace whatever may be on your mind? Maybe some European tips if you're going to Europe. He's just gotten back from the excursion. Mm-hmm. Maybe you want to talk about European vacation. We compared you to Clark Griswold a few times. And we're wondering, like, how you related when you were going through some areas of Europe and the challenges that came up for Clark and whether you were better equipped. I feel like you were better equipped than Clark to handle some of the adversity that came up. And I know your kids were sharper than the Griswold kids.
Oh, definitely.
Being able to handle that stuff. Willie and D-Mace here on 102.5 The Game. We're back after this.
D-Mace. He played 15 years in the NFL.
Quick throw.
He had over 12,000 receiving yards.
Midfield, and there he goes! 80 yards for the touchdown!
And now you can ask him anything. Have a question about football or life? Now's your time to ask D-Mace.
We'll welcome you in.
Now on Caroline, Willie, and
D-Mace.
Fire. On 102.5 and 106.3, The Game and the Game Nashville app.
All right, it is time to ask D-Mace here on 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, and we are cruising along towards 4th of July weekend here on the 3rd, and we are live and local. That means it's time to hit the phones, and we're going to ask you to go old school today, 615-737-1025, and ask D-Mace what's going on. You can ask him about his European vacation. You can ask him about the Titans. You can ask about the craziness of this week for the Nashville Predators and all of the work that they have done. You can tell a dad joke, or you can weigh in on the movie debate that D-Mace and I are on opposite sides of the fence. He's gone against the Sandlot, and he has gone with Back to the Future. First, I got to ask this question. Connor Newt back at the studio. So, Connor, he's a little younger than us, D-Mace. Let's just gauge it, first of all. Have you seen both of these movies, one, the other, or neither?
I've seen both. Thank you.
Okay. Excellent. Well, that's good.
Okay.
That's
this good. Is a good start. Somebody has led you down the right. Now, you mentioned, too, you're kind of an old soul with the music, too. So somebody has been teaching you well.
Yeah, I'm kind of an old soul when it comes to, I guess, pop culture and stuff like that.
Okay. All right. So which way do you lean? Break the tie here. Back to the Future or The Sandlot?
I gotta go Mace. I love Back to the Future.
Yes. Yes.
D-Mace really likes to drive fast, so that's part of it, I think, for him. But
anything that allows you to travel to the future or into the future or back to the future, that's a win for me. It's a win.
Okay.
Who wouldn't want to do that?
So it's about the science fiction part of it.
Exactly. We've all done Sandlot. We've all were Sandlot. We all were in our neighborhood. We had our group of friends and we were Sandlot. Everybody did that. Nobody went back in the future or to the future, forward into the future.
All right. And so, Connor, what separates it for you?
I love both, but Back to the Future, the first one especially to me is just, that's like one of my favorites ever. The whole
it's great.
The final scene where he's at the prom and he does Johnny B. Good, that just makes the whole movie for me. It's it's just a great movie.
Okay, I am definitely a thumbs up on this, but to me the Sandlot separates itself because it is so, it nails on the head just the stupid stuff that all generations of kids do. And I'm going to trust that even today, even though with all the phones and the video games and the electronics that have you spending a lot less time walking around aimlessly in the sandlot or around the neighborhood or at the neighborhood pool, maybe you're not doing that as a group as much as you did. You still have these really silly conversations covering the weirdest topics, making each other laugh or daring each other to do dumb stuff. I just think it just hits right on the head. Like, you know, who didn't have a friend who tried chewing tobacco or Copenhagen or something like that and got sick? And of course, they're crazy enough in the movie to get on the crazy ride at the carnival doing it. But it didn't even take that for one of my buddies to start, you know, he was out of commission. He put, you know, I don't know, we're 12 or 13 years old. Hey, let's try this Copenhagen. I was like, man, I don't know if that's a good idea. And next thing you know, he was out, man. He was done. So Sandlot's got that, man. He's got it. So
yeah, both are great movies. So, you know,
all right, let's go to the phones. 615-737-1025. You can wait on this debate. You can ask D Mace anything. Jump in. We've got some lines open here. 615-737-1025. We can get into some July 4th plans too. Like, what's the perfect 4th of July move on the grill or anything like that? But let's start with Eric. Eric, welcome to the show. You're on 102.5 The Game.
Happy 4th of July, guys.
Hey, same to you, Eric.
Yeah. You were talking about the satellite. In fact, they're showing it right now. I mean, not right this moment, but they've been showing it in the rotation of movies, baseball movies on the Major League Baseball Network. And it's just hilarious to see when they talk about Babe Ruth because he had lost his dad's Babe Ruth ball and he didn't realize who Babe Ruth was. And they've said all this, it's the Bambino and all this type of stuff. It was just hilarious. And this reaction when he found out that was the ball that he lost, that he had brought out to play with the guys. So that was pretty hilarious. But, guys, I also got a dad joke for you, Derek. I think you'll feel like this one. Did you hear about the devil worshiper who was a terrible speller?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, well, he gave his soul to Santa.
I haven't heard that one at all.
Yeah.
Did you get that from somebody?
Yeah, I did. I actually heard it on the TV show when they guys were telling jokes. This was a few days ago. That's how I have to catch that one. So, yeah, like I said, 90% of the jokes I actually hear. There's a few I make up, but most of the jokes I hear, I either hear on TV, radio, through friends and stuff like that. But I thought you might like that one. One thing I was going to ask, you know, really kind of brought it up towards the end, is about the grill. I mean, what is your favorite food do you like to grill? Of course, I know a lot of people like, you know, burgers and brats and ribs and all that type of stuff. But I tell you what, one person, I've even heard some people say they grill vegetables. I said, man, get that out of here. I ain't having no vegetables grill on 4th of July. I want the meat. I'm a meat freak. So, but what is the one go-to meat that you like to particularly grill out on for as far as food? Guys, y'all have a great 4th. We'll talk again soon. Y'all take care.
All right. Thanks a lot, Eric. I can't wait to hear this answer because D-Mate is not a meat guy.
Because I'm not a meat guy, but I do cook, you know, meat for the kids or friends come over. This year, the kids are visiting family. So it would be me, myself, and I So the grill will not be turned on. But if the kids were here, I would cook. You know, I like cooking burgers for the kids if they want it, some ribs for the kids if they want it. But for me, as much as Eric doesn't want his vegetables grilled, I will grill some vegetables, okay? I will grill some corn. You know, whatever it is I can grill vegetable-wise, I will do it. So, but as far as meat, I like cooking whatever the kids want to eat because I don't eat it. So the kids always wonder, well, Dad, why does it taste so good and you don't eat it? Because I tell them I've been grilling since I was 2 years old. So I know how to season the meat. All right. So you ain't got to worry about
okay.
it.
All right. As we go to the break, I've got the dad joke for the holiday weekend that I think is going to work. It'll play for you.
All right, Willie, it better not bomb. It better not bomb, Willie.
All right. I'm going to throw it at Connor, right? Just to see, we'll have D-Mace's reaction. Let's see if Connor can answer this question. Connor, what is the leading cause of dry skin?
I don't know, lack of water or something like that.
D-Mace, you have it?
The leading cause of dry skin? I know it's something like, I know it's something witty too. What is it, Willie?
Fouls.
What did you say?
Towels.
Vowels.
Towels. Boo.
Oh,
vowels.
Towels. Towels. Oh, Willie. Come on.
I think that's going to work for you. Towels are the leading cause of dry skin.
That was the that's obvious, but no one thought of it. Towels.
So if you're hanging with the at the pool on 4th of July, I think that joke will it'll fly. It'll fly.
I think it will too. I
it's
think
the
it
leading
will too.
Cause of dry skin. All right. When we come back, we'll have another round to ask D-Mace and we'll have more tomfoolery. 615-737-1025. Stay tuned. We're coming back. Here on 102.5 The Game, Willie and D-Mace. This is Ask D-Mace, a segment we do every week. Usually it's on Friday, and usually we have the text line, but today it is down. Hopefully next week we'll have that raring to go. And if you want to call us, 615-737-1025 to ask D-Mace. Go old school. Call him, ask him your question. So we've got Carl on the line. Let's get to Carl. Carl, welcome into the game.
Am I on?
You're
yes,
on,
you are.
Carl.
Oh. Long-time listener, first-time caller. D-Mace, my question is, what is your favorite memory when playing for the New York Jets?
getting out of
that's
there.
A
that
setup.
Was my, yeah,
that's
getting
a
out of there. That was my favorite memory, getting out of that place.
Taking a jet out of New York? Is that what
exactly,
it is?
Exactly. Taking a jet out of New York and away from the New York Jets. No, but... Yeah, that was my fondest memory. But that place, I mean, you know, I met some good people within the building. So I'm not going to say it was all bad, but I met some good people within the building, great facilities. But I think that that team, because of their prior success, didn't know how to handle it. They just didn't. And it started with the head coach. And it kind of sort of trickled down to everybody else. That was not a, it wasn't a locker room that I was used to, let's just say that. And ultimately, I ended up getting traded to the Houston Texans. But again, met some good people there, but it wasn't the place that I thought it was going to be. Let's just leave it at that.
When you went to the Jets, what did you think your role was going to be? How did you see it playing out before it kind of went sideways?
I'm going to tell you what they told me. They said, you're a 100 ball catcher here because they were, you know, they were looking at it. They had already had Plexico Burris. They had, I don't know why I'm forgetting the other wide receiver out of Ohio State that was there, a damn good wide receiver at that. And then it had a tight end and was pretty good. Their running backs were set. Offensive line was older, but you know they had been proven that they were good.
These were the Mark Sanchez Jets.
Yeah, these were the Mark Sanchez Jets. So you know Rex, when I got them, you know, when he and I talked, he basically said, listen, you a 100 ball catcher in this offense. And I'm not mincing words here. That's what came out of his mouth. And had an opportunity to win there because of what they'd done in the previous two seasons. And that was my main goal, was to go there and win a championship and be productive at, you know, while doing it. But neither one of it worked out. That whole season was a debacle. And, you know, ultimately I end up getting traded right after or right before Halloween, I believe, and end up going to Houston. So what I thought it was going to be, what I was told it was going to be, was something totally different.
Wow. So when you got to Houston, that had to almost feel like full circle. Now, you when you were drafted by the Oilers, they had already moved from Houston, right?
They were in the process of moving. We still spent 2 weeks a training camp, well, mini camp there in Houston. But then when we gathered again for training camp, we were here in Nashville, obviously. So they had already made the decision to leave. And as a matter of fact, I think the name had already changed when they drafted me. I think I got drafted by the Tennessee Oilers, if I'm not mistaken, because they had already changed the name.
So let me ask you this. When you got to Houston and, you know, you went through the whole ordeal with the Jets, at what point did you decide, like, how did it end? Were you thinking, okay, this is just time for me to stop playing, my body's not responding, or did you want to give it another try somewhere else?
No, when I got traded away from the Jets, mentally I was done. I was just done. I didn't have a desire to want to even go to practice. And I knew that I was done after that. I knew the minute I stopped wanting to go to practice, because to me, practice was the fun part. I enjoyed practice, you know, prior to that. But once I got traded, I lost the desire to even want to practice. It had nothing to do with my body. My body was feeling fine, but mentally I was done. And I had always, you know, told myself, once this became a job, then it's time for me to segue out of it. Now, fortunately enough for me, it didn't become a job until after, you know, till my 15th year. So I had spent a huge chunk of time in the NFL. But that last year, once I got traded from the Jets, I knew mentally that I was done. So I couldn't wait for the season to be over with.
Okay, that's a segment for Ask D-Mace. When we come back, we'll have the final hour of our show. Jonathan Marchessault was probably the biggest story today. He faced the Nashville media for the first time. He actually came on our morning show with Robbie, Adam Bingen, and Paul Kuharsky were a part of it. We're going to play you that interview when we come back. And then there's something I want to hit D-Mace with, because I think there is a parallel to the track of Jonathan Marchessault's career and the place he is right now at age 33 moving forward. And I'm thinking back to when D-Mace was let go by the Titans, and obviously the salary cap was at the forefront of both of these teams. They didn't want to do it, but they had to get rid of one of their core guys, and how it sits with the athlete that's wired like these guys, it's a good thing for the next team they go to, just like it was for the Ravens when D-Mace got there. But Jonathan Marchessault is kind of in those shoes right now. We're going to hear from him when we come back, when he joined our morning show, and then D-Mace and I will sort of hash it out. Then we'll take it to the bank on the final segment of our show, heading into the holiday weekend here. Stay tuned. We're coming back.